Bobby is yawning already. That's all right. Amanda yawns. Everybody yawns. It doesn't matter. I want to thank Cade for the great job that he did in leading us in song. And I want to invite you to turn to Acts chapter 2, where we'll be momentarily. On the screen, it's got nothing to do with Acts chapter 2. My sister was 20 years older than me. She got married when I was just a little fella. I think I was 3, not quite 4. I remember her wedding, if you can believe that, a little bit of the wedding because I ate sausage balls, a lot of them. You know, and I just remember that, and stepping, somebody said, "You're stepping on her train." I'm like, "I don't see any trains. Trains are cool, and this is a wedding." But I think it was her dress. So she got married and she moved off, but she would call the house, because I was still there with mom and dad. She would call the house when certain movies came on. I don't know why. When Gone with the Wind came on, she'd call out. We didn't have a TV guide, you know. Gone with the Wind is on. Well, that was her favorite movie, I think. She only liked it, though, up to The Picnic. And if you've seen that movie, The Picnic's like the first thing in the movie. She felt like everything got sad after The Picnic. I'm like, that's 20 minutes of a 12-hour movie. Ben-Hur, she would call. She thought Daddy liked The Chariot Race in Ben-Hur. So when it was on, The Chariot Race is on, Daddy. And in that last one, I'll tell you what. You know what that movie is? Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz. When you are a kid, The Wizard of Oz is the creepiest movie there is. Because you know what it's got in it? Flying monkeys. Flying monkeys. I don't like flying roaches. My least favorite insect is the flying roach because in my mind, it can take off and you don't know where it's going to go. It could land right here behind your ear and just flutter its wings. Flying monkeys? Why did she tell me that? Brandon, Wizard of Oz is on. Thanks, I'll turn it off. It's creepy. But I've seen the movie. I've seen it. There's a scene at the end. Have you ever realized, I didn't know this growing up, that the people, that she, like the farmhands, were in her dream. And when she wakes up at the end from being knocked out, she says, "But it wasn't a dream. It wasn't a dream. It was a place. And you were there." Because the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion were the farmhands. And the wizard was like the local fortune teller. You know who the Wicked Witch of the West was, don't you? Wasn't she like the school teacher? It's bad stuff right there. Well, this scene rings true, though, the scene I have on the screen. Because don't you think you'll often meet people in one place that'll remind you of somebody you know somewhere else, right? I've met people before. I've taught school long enough that, you know, I'll have a student at one place that reminds me of someone that I taught somewhere else. Or maybe it's a sibling, or maybe it's a family member. Maybe they're not even related at all. And I think that's also true in congregations of God's people, for better or for worse. You know, you'll meet people that will remind, if you've been a member of the church long enough and you've worshiped at different congregations as you've traveled, as you've lived, and you've met different people. And that's a wonderful thing. And 9 out of 10 of those experiences are great. I think that's fair to say. Maybe 1 out of 10, probably not even that often, you meet folks that, you know, maybe a little cranky. But you know what? On the lighter side, in every congregation, there's the guy that makes the chili. You know what I mean? There's the cook. I know John Varesco here. Where is John Varesco? He makes chili. He's a good cook. I know when we worshiped at Shades Mountain, Don Dean was one of the best cooks that we've ever known. In every congregation, you've got that guy, you know, or that lady that is a spectacular cook. And on the other hand, it doesn't usually take too long to identify who, you know, the grumblers are going to be. And I have to take care that I'm not one of those myself. But I read about a principle. I was reading a book once. I think it's called What Great Teachers Do Differently by Todd Whitaker. But Whitaker said, he told the story about a principal in a faculty meeting. And that principal said to all the teachers that were there, he said, "It's the first day of school." He said, "If I were," he's already having a faculty meeting, but he said, "If I were to ask y'all on the first day of school, which teacher here is going to send the most kids to my office? Could y'all tell me who that's going to be? Teachers just kind of laughed. I don't know if anybody volunteered, but they knew. Teachers know. That's the teacher that's going to have the most problem with her kids or his kids before the year even starts. They're already pegged. That's just the one. They're not going to get along well. Well, I was thinking about that quote from that Whitaker book. I wonder if you were to ask our elders, well, we won't put them on the spot, elders in any congregation, right? If they could predict, you know, if you need to call somebody needs help, who can you call? And they have people that are going to come to their mind. I know that. I know Blake Ham's going to be one of them. I know Blake Ham would do anything he could for anybody here. That's just the kind of man he is. And then I wonder, we won't call out no names because there's no names to call. But if you were to ask them, if there's somebody that's going to complain about something, and Homer says, probably going to be you, Renfro, right? But could they identify? If somebody's going to grumble, if somebody's going to complain about something, who's that going to be? I bet they could identify it with a great degree of accuracy. So what I want to do tonight, though, is not focus on the negative side of things, the positive side of the ledger I want to look at. And the question we're going to ask is, what does every church need? What does every congregation need? In other words, rather than being known as the complainer or the fault finder, who should I want to be? And I ask you, I think, to turn to Acts chapter 2. Drop down to verses 44 and 45. Every congregation of God's people needs load lifters. In Acts chapter 2, we read about the establishment of the church on the day of Pentecost. Now, how many obeyed the gospel on that day, or how many were added unto them according to chapter 2, verse 41, I think it is? About 3,000 souls. Well, where did they go? Right? They didn't all just go home. Some of them stayed behind in Jerusalem. And there arose a great need for a benevolent work. Who's going to feed them? Right? Where are they going to live? Now, notice verse 44. And all that believed were together and had all things common and sold their possessions and goods and parted them to all men as any man or every man had need. So our brethren, from the start, were well aware of the concept of stewardship. Right? All of us are stewards. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 2. Every single one of us, God has entrusted us, right, to be stewards of His work. And He wants us to remember that none of what we have belongs to us in the ultimate sense. Right? Somebody says, well, I got a deed to my house. Whose is that going to be, you know, in 100 years? Turn over to Acts chapter 4. Those that had land or houses, we're told, sold them, brought the money to the apostles, and one of those who did so was a man named Joseph. We don't know him as Joseph, though, do we? He was from the island of Cyprus. So if the property that he sold was there, what kind of property would that have been? Right? That would have been island property, very valuable. His original name was Joseph, but his actions so impressed the apostles that they gave him another name, didn't they? Barnabas. And what does Barnabas mean? Son of exhortation. Son of encouragement. He's the only brother mentioned by name in this passage, even though many brethren apparently did that. Now, tell you what, if that was today and we left somebody's name out, we'd get in trouble, wouldn't we? If many people did something, but we only mentioned one, you are going to get your ear chewed. I think that rather quickly. So many folks today, if we're not careful, we just get consumed with who gets the credit or who's going to get recognition for what happens. But Luke only chose one person to mention specifically, in a positive light. One writer said that Barnabas became great and he didn't even try. But some of those who try the hardest for recognition and to make a name for themselves leave the most damage in their wake. You know, if we had been among the number of folks that sold their land, I wonder how we would have felt if we hadn't been mentioned. But those brethren weren't concerned about recognition, were they? No, but with the welfare of their brethren. Now keep your finger in Acts and turn over to Galatians 6. Galatians 6 verse 2, "Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill," and in this manner, right, "bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ." We live under law today, not the law of Moses, but we're still under law, aren't we? The law of Christ. We're not lawless just because we're not under Moses' law. So we need load lifters in the church today. People who are able to see the needs and the burdens of others and respond to them. Everybody's got different talents. Everybody has different things that they're good at. I am good at so very little. I'm not good with my hands. Amanda can use a miter saw and I'd cut my hand off. I shouldn't even tell you that. Waylon's laughing at me. It's just true. But think about this, and it's just the attitude I guess I'm thinking about. There's a big difference, I think, and I'm not trying to split hairs between, well, if I can do anything for you, just let me know. And I'm not knocking that. I know I've said that myself, but you see what I'm trying to say. The difference between, well, if I can do anything for you, versus what do you need? You know, what can I do? I'm coming over. What do you need? We need to be aware when people have needs and be sensitive to it. You know, wasn't it John that talked about that? If you see somebody in need, or is it James, and you say to them, "Depart in peace, be you warmed and filled," but you don't do anything to help them, right? Good luck with all that. Well, I hope everything works out okay. I'll be praying for you. Nothing wrong with praying for somebody, but help them, right? Maybe God is going to answer their prayer through your hands, right? So when we see that people have these needs, we need to be sensitive to that and to help them out, right? Someone's going to be in the hospital, right? Someone's needs their grass cut. What do you do? Don't wish them well with it. We need to get that done. That's the kind of practical things I'm talking about. How can we help? We need to have eyes that see. You know, sometimes I'll pray, "Lord, I want to do good." You know, I'll pray, "Lord, give me opportunities to do good and give me the wisdom to see when they arise." Right? Help me to have eyes to see what I can do. Because so often I think we leave things undone that we would love to do if we just realized it. So every church needs people like that. They need load lifters. Turn over to Acts chapter 9. Acts 9, we read about the conversion of Saul of Tarsus. Just like every church needs load lifters, every congregation needs friend finders. You know that after Saul was converted, his former Jewish brethren wanted to kill him. And so our brethren had to let him down over a wall in a basket. Read about that in his writings to the Corinthians in order for him to escape. But later, Saul wanted to go back and join himself to the brethren in Jerusalem. We would call it placing membership. Saul wanted to place membership with the Jerusalem church. But those folks, and I don't know that I blame them, I guess. I probably would have felt the same way. I would have been skeptical. Those brethren in Jerusalem remembered him. Hey, wasn't he the one that when Stephen was stoned to death, he consented to it and held their clothes? And they said, "He's that fella that entered into every home, right? And you remember him?" Maybe they had family members. He hauled off my sister to her death. You wouldn't remember that? Of course you would. And now he wants to be a member of this congregation? I'll tell you what, I don't trust him. It's a trick. I mean, you could see how that thinking is so easy to look back and criticize them for being hesitant. We probably would have been the same way. But Barnabas, good old Barnabas that we just talked about earlier in Acts 5, Barnabas goes to them and says, "Brethren, I want to tell you something. This man has been converted," right? He's no longer persecuting the church now. He preaches the faith that he once destroyed. He said, "Give him a chance. You know, get to know him. Well, it's good to have a friend, isn't it? Every congregation of God's people needs friend finders. I'm going to tell you this. I think one of the hardest things to do is to walk up to a stranger and to stick out your hand. You know, we often talk about, and I'm going to tell you this, I'm so bad at this. Alan is great at this. I think Chance is, well, I'm not good at this. Like, there are probably 23 people here right now if they were visiting to say, I've been here for 12 weeks and you ain't been by to see me. I'm sorry, and I repent of it now. I'm not good at that. I'm so awkward at that. Do you ever do this? I'm bad at this. I think I did it earlier today. Meeting somebody, and I'll say, hey, how are you doing today? And they'll say, I'm doing well, how are you? And I'll say, I'm good, how are you doing? Well, man, but, you know, I think we just did that. I think we just did that. Or they'll say, good morning, and I'll say, good, how are you? Well, I said, good morning. You just say good morning back. You don't skip to the next question. And I'm not good at that. I'm just not very good at that. Somebody may be here 7 weeks before I go by and say, isn't that awful? I'm like the seventh preacher here. I should eventually go by and say hello. I like to let everybody else have their chance first. It's what I'm doing, right? But sometimes we'll talk about friendly congregation. Oh boy, Jacksonville is a friendly congregation, and I think so. But we always want to be careful that when we say friendly, we don't just mean, and what we often mean is we're friendly with each other. You know, we're friendly with each other. We like each other, but we don't often talk to our visitors. How often do you think this story could be repeated? You got two church members in the foyer talking. Two more people walk in. One's a member of the church. One's a visitor. So after the two people walk in, now the three members of the church continue talking, and they kind of turn their back, and the visitor's left to his own to kind of walk in and to find his seat. Right? Need to do our best, and I'm talking to myself. I'm talking to myself as much as to anyone. But we need to do our best to greet visitors, to say hello to them before they leave our building. If they've thought enough of us to visit with us, we ought to try to find them and tell them we're glad that they came. I read a study that said that when we baptize somebody into Christ, someone obeys the gospel, but they haven't made a good friend in the congregation, chances are they'll be gone within 2 months. 2 months if they've not made a good friend. So we need folks who will help people become better acquainted with each other. I mentioned Don Dean earlier. I said he was a good cook. When I was in school, we worshiped at Shades Mountain where Mel Futrell preaches. He's been there for a while because I know that was 2001. Mel's still there now. Don Dean was an elder there then. He's an elder at Glencoe now. But this is what they would do, and it made an impression on me as a younger man. Whenever they had Shades Mountain's a congregation, it was probably around 100 or so at the time, maybe 70 or 80 now. But whenever they would have visitors, Don was one of the elders, and you know, if you were a visitor there, you were going home to eat with the deans, or you were going out to eat with the deans. That's just what they did. They did that for Amanda and I the first time that we came. And then, you know, oh, wow, they must really like us. But then they did that for every visitor that would come. And that's great. That made people feel at home. I thought that was a nice thing that they did. I'm not saying that you have to take a visitor out to dinner, but I'm saying we need to be friend finders, right? We don't need to let people just stay to themselves. I'm going to give you the flip side to that coin, too, while I'm thinking about it. We want to be friendly. We want to be welcoming and inviting. We don't want to be rude. But at the same time, how about this? We don't want to smother our visitors either, right? We don't want to smother them either. You know, sometimes in our zeal, we've got a visitor, and I know when I first started preaching and we were at Trustful, and there's like seven of us. I mean, we knew. It was silly to say, if you're visiting with us today, we're glad that you're here, because like, we know if you're visiting, because there's not but five of us. You know what I mean? And so, and the temptation was just to go and swarm them. Oh, you're big. How long have you been here? Are you going to come back? When are you going to come back? Where are you from? Where do you work? And they're looking at you like, and you know, we don't want to smother our visitors. Let them breathe. Let them breathe. You know what? If they're not a member of the church and you haven't set up a Bible study with them before they've left, that's okay. That's okay. Get them later. We don't want to scare our people. Just common sense. We want to be friendly. We don't want to be creepy. You know, that's kind of there's got to be a happy medium between those two. But we need friend finders. Turn to Acts 15. Every congregation needs friend finders, load lifters. Number 3, every congregation needs bridge builders. Acts 15, Paul and Barnabas. There he is again. Barnabas has been in every point that we've had tonight. They were going on a missionary journey. They'd already been on one journey, taking John Mark along with them. But John Mark, for some reason, left and he went back home. We don't know exactly why, but Paul didn't like it. Paul didn't care for him going back home, that's for certain. And so when Paul and Barnabas got ready to take journey number two, Barnabas said, "Hey, let's take John Mark." John Mark was his cousin. That was kinfolk. And Paul says, "You know what? I don't think I am. I don't think we should, because he left us the last time." So there was a contention between them, a disagreement between Paul and Barnabas. In fact, they ended up separating, didn't they? Paul took Silas, wasn't it? And Barnabas took cousin John Mark. Well, let me ask you this. Who was right? Who was right, Paul or Barnabas? Maybe they both were right. This was a matter of judgment. This was a matter of judgment. It's not necessarily a matter of right and wrong. This shows, by the way, that our judgment can differ on some things, can it? Without it being sinful. We can have differences in matters of opinion and us not break our fellowship and us still be friends. But ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about what Barnabas could have said to Paul if he had been so minded? I've always had to be careful. I don't want to be a person who thinks they've got to get the last word in on something. And I've tried to learn as I've gotten older, you know, sometimes the things that you don't say are just as important, if not more so, than the things that you do say. And sometimes it's best to just be quiet, and I'm still working on that. Sometimes it's best to just keep your mouth shut. But you know what, Barnabas, if he had been that type of person, Barnabas could have said, "You know, I can't believe you're not going to let John Mark go. Because it seems like I remember a time, Paul, or should I say Saul, when you needed some help, when the folks in Jerusalem didn't want to let you in the door, and I went to bat for you, didn't I? I stood up for you so they would accept you, and now here we go, find a way you repay me. Oh, a lot for John Mark to go, and you're not having it." Well, well, well. It's not how he was. That's not how Barnabas was. You know, I said sometimes what we don't say just as important, maybe more so than the things that we do say. I heard a preacher once ask, he was teaching his Bible class, and he said, "Is there anybody here who's ever said anything that they wished they hadn't?" And he said, an older lady in the congregation raised her hand and said, "I don't believe I've ever said anything I wished I hadn't said." And that preacher said later, "Well, maybe," but he said, "she said plenty of things that I wish she hadn't said." Barnabas was a man who wanted to give John Mark a second chance. Now, I wonder how that all ended. Turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 4. Because I wonder what would have happened to John Mark if nobody had given him a second chance. I think I would have just wilted. If here's the Apostle Paul and he says, "I don't think you need to go, Brandon. You know, you left us last time. Won't you go on home again to mama?" You know, that'd be tough. That'd be tough to, you know, "I'll tell you what, I'll never darken the door," you know. Well, notice what Paul says. This is Paul writing not long before his death now. Years have passed, right? He's in prison, Roman prison, and he's waiting execution. 2 Timothy 4:11, Paul writes to Timothy, "Take Mark." Same Mark. "Take Mark and bring him with you, for he is profitable to me for the ministry." Now let me ask you this. Would Paul have ever been able to say that, to write that, if Barnabas had not given Mark a second chance? As it turns out, Mark would go on to do great things in the kingdom, wouldn't he? You know, he wrote a gospel, the gospel that bears his name, right? I'm thankful for his second chance. I'm thankful for Barnabas's attitude. And you can see why they named him, the apostles named him, the son of encouragement, which just means you're an encourager. You're an exhorter. And that's what I would want to be. I don't want to be, you know, Debbie Downer. I want to be someone that builds people up and not tears them down. And that's something that we all need to work on. Alan, I hope Alan next year. Alan's already got planned out, you know, what he wants to do and his themes. Alan is so far ahead. But Alan was going to talk about, or maybe preach about, what he called greenhouse churches. Greenhouse churches. What can we do here to make this an even warmer environment? You know, he travels all over the country preaching. He sees things in some congregations, some things maybe he doesn't care for as much, others that are, you know, work really well. And what could we do? You know, not just to be friendly to each other, but what could we do to be the type of congregation? Because we all know that we can improve. Doesn't matter how many times you get bragged on here, you know, we can still improve. And we want to do better. What can we do to be bridge builders and load lifters and friend finders? But here's what I wanted to leave you with tonight. Last passage we'll look at is in the last book of the Bible. Turn to Revelation chapter 2. This is the, you know, the seven letters, the letters to the seven congregations in Asia. This is the letter to Pergamum, Revelation 2:17. Revelation 2:17, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who conquers, I will give some of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone with a new name written on the stone that no one knows except the one who receives it." Well, that is fascinating to me. And I know that Revelation is a highly symbolic book. And I know that this is open to more than one interpretation, though obviously it has one ultimate meaning. There's more than one possibility of what that true meaning could be. But let's just say I'm not saying this is the definite interpretation of the passage. I'm just saying, I'm offering this as food for thought. I certainly wouldn't be dogmatic. I'm just saying, what if God, when we get to heaven, you know, we have names now, right? Who gave you your name? Chances are your mom and dad named you, or maybe someone else in the family named you. But what if when we get to heaven, what if God gives us a new name? What if God is going to one day in heaven give us a new name that is in keeping with our true character? Right? You've seen, I know I've watched, was it Dances with Wolves, that with Kevin Costner, where the Indian names have meanings, right? They have different characters, and the characters' traits get their name. What if God gives us a name based on our personality, based on how we live this life? Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be interesting? What would your name be? Right? Now you're in heaven, so I don't think your name there's going to be the griper or the complainer, because I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to make it to heaven. Do all things without murmurings and disputings. But what would your name be right now? What would your name be if God gave you a name right now? What would it be? Right? Something to think about. That's something to think about. And I want to give you this. I'm going to leave you with this as food for thought. When a brother or a sister in Christ meets someone in their travels, when a brother or sister in Christ meets someone who reminds them of you, what will they be like? Oh, I met someone that was so good and kind. You know, I would hope, right? Versus, oh, me. That person was so constantly negative, and that person was such a complainer and a grumbler, just like Brandon Renfro. That would be to my shame, wouldn't it? Now think about yourself. When a brother or sister meets someone that reminds them of you, what will they be like? We all have room for improvement here. I know I do. But we all have room for growth. Let's work on being the kind of people that God wants us to be. Load lifters and friend finders and bridge builders. Thank you for your attention tonight. I appreciate it so very much. You're always such a wonderful, wonderful audience to speak to. I'm going to extend the Lord's invitation. Kate has selected an invitation song. If there's anyone here tonight who's never named the name that is above all names, you're going to have the chance to do that, to confess Christ and be immersed in water, to have your sins washed away. If you're here as a child of God and you would like for us to pray with you, we can do that as well. Whatever your need is, just let us know. Let it be made known now while we stand and sing.